We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Let's go now. You fire the first shot. Let's go, man.
Jason Leisure.
I'm here in the studio at The Score. This is a very, very special honor for you.
Bears writer for the Chicago Sun-Times.
I don't really like doing the radio, man.
Yes.
I don't like doing sports radio like the typical. That's why I've wanted to be on your show, because your show is, what's the word for it? Interesting.
Jason Leisure, host of the Sports Adjacent podcast. His takes will leave you speechless.
Imagine you want to go for a run. It takes everything you've got to stagger to the finish line of 16 miles. And now I'm going to say 217. 16 is too many. And now they're adding one.
Jason Leisure with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Jason Leisure joins me on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He covers the Bears. The Bears are getting ready for a significant game? What? This game is for first place in the NFC North. Aaron Rodgers out here doing the charm offensive, talking about how he used to watch Channel 9 growing up. And I believe he called it the Big G, though, which no one calls it. But that's fine. It's fine. But he grew up watching Michael Jordan and Cubs baseball, and he loves Bears fans and all sorts of other stuff. Meanwhile, Bears fans have a new crush. And it's Justin Fields, and he gets his first opportunity to go up against the Packers. Hello, Mr. Leisure. How are you?
Lawrence, what's going on, man? Now, that's not all Aaron Rodgers said. It wasn't all charming and flattery.
Well, I mean, then he talked about how Briggs and Tillman should be in the Hall of Fame, and there was definitely a little bit of charm going on there. What else did he say?
There was, yeah, you're correct. He did say those things, but he also was fatigued from trying to list the Bears quarterbacks that he's gone against. He got to like four and then kind of ran out of breath and ran out of time. And he also made kind of a comment that I found kind of a little bit incisive, saying that I'm paraphrasing, but a tradition of the Chicago coaches press conferences to talk about beating Green Bay at every couple, the implication being every couple of years, a new coach comes in and talks about trying to do it.
Yes, and they're rarely successful over the last, 25 years with the two quarterbacks that franchise has had. They struggle with
Lovey went 8-10. That was the best. That's the best anybody's done.
Yeah, and I remember that press conference he had where he was like, "We got a priority." And then he went down his list of priorities, and number one was beating the Packers. It's fine. It's fine. You do what you got to do. You say what you got to say to try and win some of those press conferences. But defensively, it's interesting to me when I look at the way that the Bears have been able to get after the quarterback, and you would think that after what the Browns did to the Bears, that would be the team that's leading the league in sacks. But no, the Bears have done a good job of getting to the quarterback and doing it without a lot of blitzing. That gives me a little bit of hope that they might be able to slow down Aaron Rodgers. You can't stop him, but maybe you can slow him down.
They definitely can slow him down. And first off, on your point about the sacks, I mean, man, it's Robert Quinn has made such a difference. And I, that has not normalized for me yet to be sitting here saying Robert Quinn is the key to everything that they're accomplishing defensively, because last year it was the opposite. He was the problem with the defense, that he was giving them nothing. But he just looks so good right now physically, and he's involved in so much. And you're getting great opportunities for Mac. When Hicks comes back, you're going to get great opportunities for him. That's the blueprint. That's what they envisioned. And they really need that when they have all these holes in the secondary. They're, as far as their defense and Rodgers, like they've handled Rodgers pretty well. They have a lot of times have handled him well and still lost. He has beaten the Bears with point totals of, I want to say, 10, 21, 24. All of those are below the league scoring average. And if you hold Aaron Rodgers to 21 or 24 points, you should be able to win that game. And yet you have all these games where the Bears, even in that 10-3 game from a few years ago in the opener, they didn't feel like they had a shot in that game. And it's because their offense. I mean, their problem is not as much handling or containing Aaron Rodgers lately as it is keeping up with him.
Right, which makes me ask you this question. What do you expect to see? Because it felt like the offense against the Raiders took a tiny step backwards. I love some of the innovation that they used. I love the way that they said, look, we don't have any healthy tight ends, so we're going to take Alex Barrs and do some stuff with him. But it did seem very safe, some of the play calling inside of that game. Do you think that that's how they're going to try and win against Green Bay, or will they try to have some big plays, some splash plays to try and keep up with the Packers offense instead of just trying to grind out a close loss?
I think they will try that first approach first. I think they will try to do what similar to what they did against the Raiders. And when they're down 13-0 in the second quarter, they're gonna have to pull out plan B and start throwing and really count on Justin Fields to trade punches with him. And Justin Fields was talking about how this is not a matchup between him and Rodgers. And in a literal sense, he's correct, because they don't play on the field at the same time. But that's exactly what this is, especially when your defense is good. That's what's been missing. Trubisky was not up to that. He wasn't good enough to go punch for punch with Rodgers. The Bears hope that Justin Fields is eventually. It's a lot to ask of him in his fourth start, though.
It is. It's a ton to ask of him in his fourth start, but I've enjoyed the way that he has been able to counter punch when he has been punched, and it's been good. So what's the vibe been like now that we're 2 weeks into the Justin Fields is the quarterback of this team experiment?
Well, you have that going on. You also have them winning a couple of games and getting above 500, and everything really feels good around the building when it's going like that. And now you have a test. The vibe is this: they have a test coming up that is the same test that they have to pass every year, and they almost never do. And they feel, as they have at other times, that they're ready for that test. And you know as well as I do that, 80% of the time or more, they aren't. 80% of the time or more, they've lost to Green Bay during the Rodgers era, and maybe during the Rodgers and Favre era, it's probably about that number total. So, or maybe 75% of the time they've lost. For them, it feels like that. I think on the peripheral, like for me, there's a lot of caution and a lot of hesitation. There are times when it looks like the Bears are up to something, you know, up to the task. And there are times like this where it's like, I'm really not sure. Green Bay always has a way of undressing them and kind of dispelling whatever myth you start to believe in about the Bears.
Is it possible that Matt Nagy will go to Mike Pettine and say, what is it that you all saw, and how can we not be that in this game?
You mean Matt Nagy wanting Mike Pettine's input on the Bears offense?
Yes.
Yeah. That's why I think he's here, Lawrence. I don't know that he's necessarily here so much to help Sean Desai, although that is the side of the ball he works on, and he does a lot of that. But I would imagine that Matt Nagy has had, not just this week, but going back to when they hired Mike Pettine, a ton of questions for him. And he's counting on Mike Pettine, especially this week, to be like, dude, here are the things that you do that were so easy to predict and so easy to stop. Here are the things you got to stop doing in this offense. So I think you're right on it. I think Mike Pettine is more valuable, not just this week, but it does really come into focus this week. I think he's more valuable to them offensively than defensively.
Yeah, I always wondered that. Like, that's how I kind of felt about Lovey. I always wondered if he spent some time reverse engineering his offense, because you would think that someone with those type of credentials defensively would be able to look at an offense and say, here are the things that scare us, here are the things that don't scare us. And I always wonder if coaches try to take that type of input and say, we've got tendencies, how can we break some of those tendencies and not make ourselves as predictable as we've been?
I mean, who's been Matt Nagy's nemesis more so than Mike Pettine? So he goes out and hires his arch enemy. I mean, I think to show him what he's been doing wrong.
I hope that that is the case. I really, truly
do. And I like the move. I like that move.
Yeah, me too. If I like the move if he's doing what we're talking about. Like, if he is, because it could just be, hey, I have a young defensive coordinator who's doing really well, and we'll get to you in a minute. I need someone to have some oversight over my young defensive coordinator. I hope that it's Matt Nagy going, I know I got issues, and I got issues with this team. You used to be a part of that team. Tell me what my issues are with that team. I hope that's what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, Lawrence, we always sit here and say what makes the most sense, and then we sit here and hope that Matt Nagy is doing whatever that thing is.
That's true. That is true.
That's every week.
Jason Leisure covers the Bears for the Sun-Times. He joins me here on The Score. Sean Desai is getting a lot of love. I talked with Charles Davis a couple days ago, and he was raving about Sean Desai. I've been talking to some other people around the league, and they've been raving about Sean Desai. What are some of the things that you think we can actually connect to Desai's presence and a resurgence with the Bears defense?
I think that he has looked at what he has personnel-wise and navigated that very well, meaning the holes, obvious holes in their secondary. I think that he has unlocked something with Robert Quinn by collaborating with Robert Quinn to figure out how to best use him and get something out of him at this stage. And Sean Desai, I mean, one of the things that he's always going to do is really disguise coverages. And now he's running into the guy that can read that like no one else in Aaron Rodgers. But to make everything look the same and have the quarterback before the snap not be able to tell if somebody's blitzing or what's going on. And you've seen, I don't have numbers on this, but just anecdotally from what I've seen much more moving around and stunts and things like that in the pass rush up front, where they've got Khalil Mack starting on the outside and going inside as the defensive tackle goes to the outside. They got him and Quinn going in both on the same side and really confusing people. And I think it's a combination of all of those things. Of Sean Desai realizing the pass rush is going to be our survival more so than ever. I know that's true of a lot of defenses, but it's especially true when you have question marks in the secondary. It's figuring out how to use Robert Quinn and figuring out how to just mix everything up so that you're constantly guessing as an offensive line and whoever else is blocking where the pressure is going, where the best pressure is going to come from, where the top guys, where's Mac going to actually come from when he starts outside on your right and then ends up hitting you kind of from the center to left side of Derek Carr the other day.
Okay. Let's go back to the offense for a second. Are they going to have enough healthy bodies for an offensive line and the tight end position?
No.
Okay. Ask and answer.
They already don't. They started the season without that. The answer 6 months ago would have been, or not 6 months ago, but like 3 months ago would have also been no.
So how do they go about filling some of these holes where you got guys that are hurt, guys that are on IR? How do you do it?
Somebody's got to play. And then you just hope for the best. You hope that Elijah Wilkinson can give you serviceable right tackle play. That's, well, I don't know what else you can do. I mean, you can definitely load up and put in the extra lineman and Alex Bars and have a guy in the backfield to chip. But every time you do something like that, you're taking passing options off the table. And especially if they fall behind, as they often do against Aaron Rodgers and as many teams do against Aaron Rodgers, it's pretty hard to go out there with limited options, limited availability in the passing game because you're having to bolster that offensive line so much with help.
What did they say about what they did with Bars last week? Because he played a lot of snaps at quote-unquote tight end last week.
Yeah, he's athletic and he's versatile. He's played a bunch of positions for them on the line in practice and in games. And when you're talking about, like, surprises or something sneaky they might do, that Alex Bars could be a guy worth watching. Maybe they throw a pass to Alex Bars that nobody would be expecting. But, I mean, you're only going to get away with that once, and it's only going to work in a first thing, or, you know, like from the 2 yard line or something like that, a short yardage situation. But that, I mean, he's been a good find for them as an undrafted guy that they feel good about as a backup and a spot starter, and then someone they can put in this role when they're down so many tight ends. And I don't know what their situation is going to be tight end wise this week. Jesse James is still in question. But it definitely helped. Alex Bars, definitely his versatility and physically and mentally helped them out.
One more thing before I let you go, considering where things stand with the Bears and them playing, like, I'm joking, I'm saying this tongue in cheek about this being a first place game in the NFC North. I wonder if they think that they would be here at this point with a rookie quarterback. How do they feel about where things stand being 3-2 and having an important game take place at noon on the lakefront?
I think that tells you there's a lot of good things going on for the Bears, because once you go to Justin Fields, it's really about the future. Now, if you can do some winning in the meantime, even a little bit, even 10-7, sneak into a playoff berth, then that's pretty good when you're already working toward the future. If you put everything into this season, and you stick with Andy Dalton and everything, you just pour everything you have financially and personnel wise and whatever into this season to go 10-7. That doesn't really mean anything. But when you're working towards something meaningful and incidentally, you can still win in the meantime, even a little bit, then I think that's impressive. And that's a good thing for the Bears.
Mr. Leisure, I appreciate your time. Enjoy the game this weekend. And I thank you as always for being on the show.
Thank you. It's always fun.
I agree. This is Jason Leisure. He covers the Bears for the Sun-Times, and he's a contributor to our show, and we appreciate that he's available for us. Yesterday, people in the 1 o'clock hour, I know the listening patterns are a little bit different, but we started the show yesterday with Steve Stone, and I thought that there was some significant stuff that Stoney said about the problems of the White Sox going into the offseason that I think that you as a White Sox fan should hear. I will share those with you next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
At first, I thought that was Anthony Hamilton, and I was like, of course Herbie wouldn't play Anthony Hamilton because he hates him for some reason. I don't fully understand it, but it is what it is. Glad that you're hanging out here with
you. I don't hate him. I just really don't understand him.
What do you mean you don't understand him?
I understand why he's popular, but his music doesn't speak to me. It's kind of like Jasmine Sullivan. Same thing. Like, I understand they're good at their craft. I just don't dig them.
You don't get it. Okay. All right. That's fair. So I guess there's no Jasmine Sullivan in the vault either. It's fine. Will you be going to the Fugees concert?
Not a big Refugees fan.
Wow, really?
No. As I understand that Bruce Springsteen is awesome, just not my flavor. Also, same thing with the Fugees.
Herbie's line about Bruce Springsteen is?
If he's the boss, then I quit. That's really not my line. It's my friend Matt Vandenbrock's.
The only thing about showing up to the Fugees concert is
Lauren getting there 7 hours later?
Right. Like, Wyclef and Praz will probably be there. And then you'll be sitting there waiting. Because that's what happens.
And I understand Lauryn Hill. People say she's one of the best female MCs of all time. But the disrespect to the queen. The disrespect to MC Lyte. What are we doing?
Man. I'm. The problem is like putting female rappers in their category. Like, I have a list, but I'm like, should I have a list? Because they're just, they should, like, MC Lyte is in my top 10 list, period. Like, maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll do top 5 male MCs and then top 5 female MCs. Because if I ever do the top 5 MCs, I mean it'll be chaos. It'll be absolute chaos.
The one from Toronto, Chaos?
No, I like Chaos, though. Chaos is all right with me. Using that house beat to get over, that's fine. It's all good. Anyway, there's some baseball that we need to discuss. And actually, it was Steve Stone who discussed it yesterday. We had a really wonderful chat with Stoney, as we often do. We had a nice time talking about baseball. And I think that there was a lot that annoyed him in this series. That's the way it came across to me, that his baseball sensibilities had been disturbed by what he saw from the White Sox playing in this series against the Astros. And since, you know, listening patterns are very different, people who listen to the top of the show don't always listen when we're getting closer to the end of the show. So I wanted to bring it back because it got a lot of run on social last night. Last I checked, like over 30,000 people had seen the video of him talking about some of this stuff. This was Steve Stone breaking down the fundamental problems that the White Sox had in that series.
Let me explain a couple of things to you, Lawrence, about a short series. And I said it beforehand, in a short series, anybody can win. Do you really believe Boston is a better team than Tampa Bay? I don't. However, in a short series, Boston was able to take them out. Yet we saw during the course of the year, Tampa Bay is a very good team. But, you know, again, a short series. Now, I'm not going to tell you that the White Sox are a better team than Houston. In fact, just the opposite. I'm going to tell you that Houston is a better team than the White Sox for a number of different reasons. But how can they get better? They can get better by paying attention to the little things. We talked about it a lot during the course of the year. The game of baseball, when two teams are evenly matched or when two teams are playing in a very close game, the game of baseball is won and lost 90 feet at a time. You give the 90 feet away, you probably lose. You take the 90 feet, you probably win. The White Sox make an inordinate amount of mistakes in close games. That's one of the reasons why when they hit multiple home runs, if you look at the numbers, they're startling. When the Sox hit multiple home runs, they win probably – I would say 85% of the time. I mean, that's some pretty big numbers. When they don't hit multiple home runs or where they don't hit any home runs, then you have to beat another team with execution. The Sox weren't able to do that very often. If I had a dollar for every time they missed a cutoff man, I would be a very wealthy man. You cannot allow that consistently. I watch Eloy Jimenez miss a cutoff man almost every throw, and you wonder, wait a second, what is this? Why is this going on all the time? And it's not just Eloy. It's just that he seems to believe that he can throw through and get everybody out. Well, when you do that, the trailer inevitably takes another 90 feet. Sometimes it takes you out of the double play. Sometimes it puts you at third base and means you can score on a short pass ball or wild pitch. We have seen the Sox having some problems defending against that. And it's not just Yasmani Grandal, although he was the number one catcher. It's every one of the catchers. They do not block balls well. And so consequently, what happens, and I think this factored in, one of the biggest hits of the ball game yesterday was watching Carlos Correa on an 0-2 count swing at a high fastball, and he drilled it into left field, drove home a couple of runs. I believe that the reason why that pitch was thrown is I don't think that Carlos Rodon was confident that if he buries a two-strike slider, it was going to get knocked down. That's just me. But I know that if I didn't have confidence that my catcher was going to be able to stop everything, it would change the type of pitch I would throw at 0-2. I wouldn't give you my best slider, wouldn't give you my best curveball. I think sometimes that comes into play. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I do know that, and I think they're going to continue with Yasmani as the number one catcher because he can really hit. We saw how effective he was as an offensive player. But if that's the case, you better get a backup catcher who can really catch. You better get a catcher who can throw somebody out stealing. And that's not just on the catchers. That's on the pitchers. We've got a whole staff of pitchers that completely ignores base runners. And consequently, when that happens, Lawrence, you steal an extra bag or you steal two bags, and then you can score in a sacrifice fly or chopper in the infield. Again, 90 feet twice, you lose. And that's what happens. I've never seen a staff, as a staff, ignore base runners as much as I see the Sox do that this year. That's a big problem because close games, teams will beat you by taking that extra base, by stealing a base, by stealing sometimes two bases. Even guys who don't run very fast are stealing bases. I've seen pitchers completely ignore base runners, only look back one time at second base. Before you know it, the guy's standing at third. That is inexcusable, but I do believe in talking with the coaching staff. That's going to be addressed a lot this spring training. I think last spring training, to a certain extent, with a fairly brand-new coaching staff and a new manager, they played a getting-to-know-you type of situation. I think this year they're going to go over everything that happened, and they're going to make some adjustments to it.
That was Steve Stone yesterday. There's a couple things I want to get into from what Stoney had to say. Number one, and now that we know that maybe it is a three-year deal, maybe it makes a little bit more sense, but for all of the things that we're supposed to like about like La Russa as the manager, isn't that one of the things that you would imagine that he would run a harder camp, that some of the fundamental aspects of baseball would be points of emphasis as the White Sox are in Glendale? People, we had a couple of like callers a few weeks ago that were talking about La Russa laying down the law with these guys. I think that's ridiculous. But if there were ever a point where you would want a manager to lay down the law to these guys, it should be in style of play. The fear was that La Russa was going to strip this team of some of its personality. And to a large degree, he didn't do that. But isn't the reason that you bring him in is to settle some of the fundamental issues? There are going to be people who are going to push back against me and say, well, you can't do that in spring training, in one spring training. And then you can't do it in the regular season because it's the regular season. And you can't do it in the postseason. So when exactly is that supposed to happen? When are those things supposed to be reinforced? When are those things supposed to be brought up, if not in a manager's first spring training? Not in the second. Because they, am I out of left field on this one, Herbie? Like, doesn't that seem strange that, oh, the second spring training, that'll be the tough one?
And I hate when people say things like, oh, it won't work. So you don't try? Like, at least try to establish what you're all about and what you expect from the players. If it doesn't work, if it doesn't hit on them, that's on them. At least you put it out there. To come back the second year where I'm tight the ship. So the players are like, nah, we're good. You didn't do it the first year. We're going to do what we did last year because we won the division.
Right.
What can you do to us, guy who makes less than us?
Maybe. We have no idea what he makes or for how long he's going to be the manager. But in the Sun-Times today, they were speculating that he's got a three-year deal. I was listening to Jason's podcast, The Full Go, which is really good.
I mean, this is neither here nor there. Breaking news, Mike Schilt out as Cardinals manager, according to Jeff Passan.
Baby, here we go. Let's play the feud.
It makes zero sense.
For them to hire him?
I mean, for him to be out.
I agree with you.
Longtime Cardinal guy. He's had success with this club.
And I think they were 50 and 50. I think they were right there with the Cubs at 500. And for them to do what they did in the last 2 months of the season was pretty impressive.
He must have MF'd somebody.
Yes. I mean, you know, if Tony wants to go and be reunited with Yachty, I'd be okay with that. By the way, this fits into my conspiracy, by the way. My conspiracy was that Schilt was going to be fired. And Tony wanted to manage a year so he could go back to the Cardinals and be ready to go. I mean, if he wants the job, I'll help him pack. I'll drive him. You probably need someone to do that.
It's going to be tough. That's a 5-hour drive. That's really boring.
I mean, what?
And while you're down there, as I say in the commercials, FanDuel, you can go to East St. Louis right there.
I can register
Fairmount Park
as a sports bettor and get it done. Anyway, I was giving some kudos to Jason on the Full Go podcast. I heard Chris Tannehill on there, by the way. He was talking about how the Astros have superstars that grind. Not like Eric Neese in the grind back in the day. Although maybe, I don't know. They probably do. But they have these superstar players who are also grinders. Like they're, I think Jason put it, they take off their cool when it comes time to play. And they do a lot of the smaller things better than the White Sox, and that's the difference. Because overall, like roster to roster, I actually think the White Sox have as much, if not more, talent than Houston does.
100% on the pitching staff.
Right.
The only pitcher that I was like, no, this guy's solid, is McCullers. All the rest, they're nice. Not anything that you should be getting scared about.
It had the White Sox won Game 4, I've been hyped for Game 5. Because I'm like, who are you going to send out there that's going to shut down the White Sox lineup?
Framber.
No. They have guys that are going to the Hall of Fame, for sure. But those guys, like, they work counts. They take, like, the extra base thing is just bothersome to me. And the flip side of that, what Stoney was talking about with it not just being the catcher, although the catcher plays a role, a significant role in it, when you have pitchers that don't even pay attention to base runners. Outside of Dallas Keuchel, we have a group of pitchers that aren't good fielders. And what's the first thing they do when they get down to Glendale, Arizona? PFPs. And people just blow it off. Like, those are ways. That's one of the ways that Dallas Keuchel has still been effective, is because he can at least defend his own position and cut down on extra pitches that he has to throw inside of a game. I don't know how you go from being the get-to-know-you guy to the tough guy. I mean, I guess it's possible that could be done, but I don't even see it as Tony doesn't have to be demonstrative. Like, he doesn't have to go into Glendale this year as King Kong or Godzilla. Just put the program together to emphasize those points. As guys are doing all of their individual stuff too, you're going to change up. These are the drills that we're going to do. We're going to do more blocked ball drills. We're going to do block ball with base running drills. We're going to try to make the guys as heads up as possible. And then their talent is clear. Like, they have a lot of talent. It just seems so strange that in an ideal world, that's why you're hiring Tony La Russa. Anyway, one of the other things that Sony said inside there that I thought was interesting was the level of trust at catcher. You guys know I'm not a fan of Yaz as a catcher. I like him on the team. I like him as a DH. If you want to catch him 40 games, 50 games a season because his bat is so prevalent, I'm cool with it. It's just there's so much that's lacking from his game behind the plate. Yes, he gives you the pitch framing. He steals strikes here and there. I shouldn't say here. That's not fair to him. He steals strikes for pitchers a lot. But the trade-off is he doesn't effectively catch the ball well. He's not a good defender of his position. Let's talk about like balls in play now. He's not good at protecting home plate. He's not good at catching pop-ups that are clearly his. He endangered Moncada. I was losing my bleep watching him do that on Friday, where he's carrying the mask and then throws it at Moncada's feet as Moncada's looking up for the ball.
And that's Moncada's ball.
Yes.
Like, it's fundamental. Throw the mask once you find the ball. Opposite where you're at.
Correct. It's catching 101. Get it out of the way of the path of anyone who might be running towards the ball. And then there's, he's not a weapon. And I brought it up yesterday. Like, they need a Maldonado type. Someone who, when that guy's behind the plate, like, you're not going to steal a base. And he just completely shut the White Sox run game down. He threw out Luis Robert, and the White Sox were like, oh, they were Homer Simpson disappearing into the shrubs. They're like, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. And it would have been helpful in this particular series if the White Sox could have stolen some bases. Why? Because they hit singles in it. But that is what Stoney said about it's possible that Rodon threw that fastball in the 0-2 count because he didn't trust Grandal to catch it. And then you have Correa saying, I 100% knew that a fastball was coming. And I was ready for it. And he was. Back after this on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
It's weird because Mike Schilt, it's 252 and 199. I don't think he had a losing season as the Cardinals manager. But he's out, and they are having a press conference about it right now. I've seen White Sox fans already be like on Twitter, be like, can we trade Tony to St. Louis for a player? I don't know who their backup catcher is, but I'd be interested in exploring that. Anyway, this stuff with John Gruden, at some point, maybe in tomorrow's show where I have a little bit more time to devote to it, I'll talk to you about it on a more personal level. But from a journalistic level, I do have some questions with the Adam Schefter story coming out. And there are questions that you can't necessarily answer. As an individual, collectively, I think that you have answered the question. And the question is, do people actually care about journalism inside of sports? And I feel like the answer is no. The way that Schefter reportedly kind of grew his empire as a newsbreaker in the NFL was by giving access to stories and books that he was writing that you wouldn't ordinarily see from a reporter. But then it leaves us sitting here going, is it utilitarian? The ends justify the means. If the quid pro quo is selling your soul a little bit, and then you get to build an empire, and you get to be the breaking news guy, was it all worth it? I don't have the answers to that question, but I'll tell you, I spent a lot of time soul searching thinking about it last night. Parkins and Spiegel join me next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.